Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that definitely would not call itself a super forecaster. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, I'm a partner of propaganda with Steve Haynes.
Oh, hey Corey. I love how super forecasters are now a thing again. It's been years since Philip Tetlock wrote that book.
Well, I'll tell you who would describe themselves as a super forecaster. A complete arse.
Oh, you mean Andrew Sabisky?
I do mean Andrew Sabisky. Well, we've gone from the general arse to the very specific arse,
yeah,
haven't we?
Yeah.
And this particular arse belongs to Andrew Sabisky, indeed. Who was, as I'm sure you're aware, a number 10 advisor.
For all of about 2 minutes.
Until lots of things that he wrote came to light, including, and I quote, "There are very excellent reasons to think the very real racial differences in intelligence are significantly, even mostly genetic in origin, though the degrees, of course, are very serious subject of scholarly debate. Also says he thinks black Americans were on average less intelligent than white Americans. Also, very Keith Joseph this, suggests introducing compulsory contraception. So one of the ways to get around the problems of unplanned pregnancies, creating a permanent underclass, like a bloody J.G. Ballard novel or something, will be to legally enforce universal uptake of long-term contraception at the onset of puberty. Vaccination laws give it a precedent, I would argue."
It's just such a... Oh. Such a horrid, horrid human being. Oh,
and why not just give everyone an IQ test and give secondary schools pupil premium money based on the number of below average ability students they get? Yes, new to the poor. Who knew that was going to come back from the days of Keith Joseph?
So what we're not going to do is actually spend too much time arguing about his views, because they're clearly just ridiculous.
I don't think we're going to spend any time at all, actually.
No.
No,
like... He's not a nice person. He's got some horrific, horrific racist views, and...
But what's more, the more interesting thing, I suppose, is that the reason why Andrew Sabisky had a role in number 10 is because of Dominic Cummings' call for weirdos and misfits to join him in number 10. And that's part of a bigger transformation of government that Dominic Cummings has planned. And it's something we've wanted to talk about for a while. Yeah. So we're going to talk about what Cummings wants to do and how successful do we think it's going to be. Well, obviously not that successful, because we've got bloody eugenics fans in number 10, but you know what we mean.
Success depends on what your criteria is. Maybe that's what he wants.
Actually, yeah, that's quite terrifying, isn't it?
Plucky music goes here.
So the initial blog post from Dominic Cummings calling for weirdos and misfits to join number 10, I think dropped around Christmas, didn't it?
Yeah, it was around about then.
It was one of those things where I was trying to take time off social media and actually spend Christmas with my family like a
normal person.
Almost. It's a very, like most of Cummings' blogs, it's quite long, it's quite rambly.
Could have been said in about 500 words, instead he took like 4,000.
It's got some weird detours about how if you work for him, you won't have any social life. It's very kind of Devil Wears Prada without any of the kind of designer labelling. He asked for misfits and weirdos to join him at number 10 to shape the government agenda, didn't he, Steve?
Yeah, so there were a couple of different like elements to the job advert in there. Shall we call it an ad job advert? Because that's basically what it was, I suppose.
Kind of Gumtree post made viral, I suppose.
Yeah. Bits of it were... on the face of it, relatively reasonable. He was talking about wanting to bring in more people with STEM backgrounds, more people with experience with big data, in effect trying to break the stranglehold of his kind of opinion of people with like PPE, kind of like degrees in the civil service and in ministers and politicians and things like that. Because fundamentally, Dominic Cummings wants to destroy everything and build it up from the ground again. He's very much a believer in like Shumpter's like creative destruction. Out of the ashes, the phoenix shall rise anew and reborn, and it shall bear his mark upon it. Kind of thing is very much what he is aiming for.
I'd say it's more Leninist or Maoist, but I suppose that says more about me, maybe. Also, that's not how creative destruction works,
no,
is it?
No, it's not.
Like, we have new ways... So, we have cars because of innovation and creative destruction, but we still have horses, But, or yeah. we still can't transport things by boats, even though we now have aeroplanes.
Yeah.
The whole... Yeah. That, his whole fallacy is wrong. Okay, so he's got a grain of truth in that we should have more scientists in and around public policy.
Yep.
Okay. However, you also need social scientists.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that.
Whereas Cummings seems to have... Well, there's a couple of things, aren't there? Cummings seems to have a very art student kind of awe of people who understand numbers and data.
One of the best kind of takes I read of both the Sabisky situation and Cummings over the past few days was from a number of different scientists who basically said these are men who have basically read too much kind of like popular science, not really understood it properly, and have just gone, this is cool, look what we can do with this. Which is, I think, sums it up quite nicely, because, like, big data, understanding it, having more people with scientific backgrounds, STEM and things like that in government, in the civil service, absolutely a good idea. Like, being able to kind of think differently to the way that maybe things are currently set up to get out of what might be a certain type of small-c conservatism and groupthink, which is something which... Let's be honest, that's kind of the in-joke of Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister about the civil service, and apparently that's accurate according to people who work with it. You know, breaking that could actually be a good thing. The issue is that I don't necessarily think that Cummings cares about the kind of like the STEM, the big data elements. What he actually wants is more people like him. What he wants is these free-thinking mavericks who are just able to kind of stick it to the man. They've got their opinions. They're highly intelligent. They're able to put their mind to anything and get stuff done. He wants to kind of almost like a modern Renaissance man, but who's got like a vague understanding of big data, a vague understanding of science, and in there, and somehow will be able to kind of utilise that in a way which is good for society.
But then also, from judging from the advert, wants very specific specialisms as well, yeah, in terms of, yeah, being like maths, lots of physics, lots of understanding data, and that there's a definite contempt for, I think, English literature graduates in particular. I think he's kind of got some sneering remarks,
yeah,
about English graduates in his initial blog. But then also says he wants insights into how people think and how people act. And I think he specifically talks about drug dealers and drug cartels in the example. And you think, well, one, what you're meant to do if you are a decent historian or a political scientist or an English literature student or what have you, is be able to put yourself into other people's shoes,
yep,
and be able to think through why people do things in particular situations. And that's the thing that's missing, I think, from Cummings' worldview. And I don't think he sees the value. And this is a problem, because if we think about what evidence-based policy is, if we assume that the point of looking at data and evidence is to decide what our policy needs to be, well, the only decent definition I can think of for evidence-based policy is science plus our values. It's no good looking at the data and saying, oh, we should do this because the data bears it out, if you know what ends you want to achieve. And those ends are always going to be ideological,
yep,
and depend on what your values are. There's no sort of objective truth in that kind of scenario.
There very rarely is. There might be some edge cases where maybe there is, but for the most part, especially when you're dealing with anything that's kind of like concerning government policy, there's going to be a value judgment in there. Even if that value judgment is, what is the most efficient way that we can like run this policy, which this data says we need to do it. Okay, that needs to be centralised. Well, in order to do that, that means we're centralising power more rather than devolving it. And that is a value judgment. That is something that would kind of like further entrench power within Westminster away from councils and regions, which is something which needs to change.
And there's books like Invisible Women show, it's also a lot of the data we have actually systematically is biased against women as well, and excludes a lot of their views from this kind of thing. I think the other thing is, if you have a kind of art student background and you have a think of the bigger picture, you have a sort of moral base and you're thinking critically, it gives you a different perspective on issues. I mean, there is no way, if you had philosophy graduates behind Jurassic Park, that theme park for dinosaurs would ever have got off the ground.
That is a brilliant analogy. You are correct in that, in all likelihood. But Let's be honest, Dinosaur Park would still be cool.
Yes, but that right, that's the point though, isn't it? That's exactly the problem. And so let's go back to this issue of Mavericks as yeah. well. And you're right, Cummings seems to want Mavericks in a very TV detective kind of way.
Yeah, he wants somebody who can just kind of come in and be like, aha, I have the solution, without actually going through the grind of working it all out. Now, what I would say is, there are good examples of Mavericks getting involved in systems and being able to shake things up, but they're just not necessarily Andrew Sabisky types. So a good example of this is, there's a gentleman on Twitter by the name of Thomas Forth, which I think his Twitter handle is just like @TomForth.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Who is a data scientist, does a lot of stuff on like public policy and public transport and things like that. And in the past, he did some work basically utilising data to look at bus routes in certain areas. I think it might have even been in Birmingham. Basically, when it actually got implemented and utilised, it was really helpful for actually planning bus routes out more effectively. But what he basically found was, when he reached out to people, was he was told, no, go away, you don't have the experience of this, you're not a transport planner, blah, blah, blah. Despite the fact that he is a data, he's somebody who understands data, utilises it properly, and is able to, you know, once it's actually implemented, make a real difference. That is the kind of the example of that kind of like the, that cultural conservatism, that groupthink, Cummings says he wants to crack. Only Forth does it in a very specialist kind of, here is my expertise, I'm applying my expertise to this area where it's not necessarily normally done. And that's not what Cummings wants in his Mavericks. What he seems to want is, as you say, like a TV detective who can come in and just solve the issue despite not actually being an expert in really anything. Like, what, again, if we go back to Sabisky, what was his qualifications? Why was he hired? What was he even doing? No one knows.
Like, I mean, I suppose one of the best reasons is actually he read Cummings' blogs and knew there was an advert and therefore applied.
Yeah.
In that, I suppose if you have an advert that's put out on your personal blog, you are being self-selecting.
Yeah.
It's not like you're putting an advert out in Wensfield Job Centre or something. And actually, if you want to find outsiders, you probably should put it in job centres. In towns outside, you know.
Well, the thing is, if you actually want outsiders who are going to be able to kind of come in with an expertise, you need to work out what that expertise is and then apply and advertise in those places where that expertise is going to be. So, like, fundamentally, if you want more STEM people or people who understand data or even, like, social scientists or whatever it might be, bung the job adverts in their industry magazines, because that's where they'll be reading them and actually looking for jobs and things themselves. Or hell, just find some ones you really specifically like and reach out to them and say, hey, we've got this project, would you like to get funding for the next 5 years? And they will bite your hand off if they're an academic for that chance.
And that's part of the issue, isn't it? Is that, yeah, Sabisky wasn't chosen, it seems, for particular areas of expertise. No one can really say what projects he was working on at number 10.
Yep.
And this is why I wanted to study English literature and be an art student, because there's a very, as we kind of hinted, there's a trope of this sort of TV detective. Like, if you've seen any type of police procedural or read any sort of detective fiction novel, most famous TV detectives like Sherlock Holmes, Hercule Poirot, Miss Marple, Philip Marlowe, tend to be outsiders who aren't professional police officers, and therefore they're almost seen as being more mavericks and have a different approach to the plodding professional police officer, and so get results. And even actual TV detectives like Inspector Morse or Columbo, or I've forgotten Helen Mirren's character in, and what the show's called, but that one.
Yeah.
They tend to be outsiders in the police force as well. And so there's this, it's this cultural idea that if you just bring someone in from outside, they'll produce results just by being different.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the
prime suspect.
I do think you're right that Cummings definitely has this idolatry of that kind of caricature of a genius. in effect, who's an outsider coming in, because that's basically what he thinks he is. He thinks he is this genius who can come in and solve all the problems because he's just smarter than everyone else. He is someone who just genuinely believes that because he's had some success in certain areas, like basically he ran a single-handedly the campaign which prevented the Northeast Regional Assembly from happening. That was just him in a shop, basically. Because he's had that kind of success, it's just gone straight to his head, and now he thinks that, oh yeah, if I'm this great, therefore other people who are like me will be this great as well.
Whereas actually, the kernel of truth in the Cummings thesis, I suppose, is better decisions are taken in more diverse groups.
Absolutely.
But therefore, the obvious solution to that is make sure that governments are recruiting more people from working class backgrounds, BME backgrounds, making sure there's 50-50 men and women,
yep.
Say. Except if you were to say that, that's probably the kind of lefty liberal bollocks. We can say bollocks, can't we?
Yeah, sure.
That's with the kind of lefty liberal bollocks that actually Cummings with a skew and assume it's just the talk of dinner party art students. When actually,
all the evidence shows that actually it's really helpful and actually presents better outcomes overall, because that's how you actually escape groupthink and the cultural conservatism of organisations, by introducing people with a genuinely different way of thinking.
Or talk to people at the Institute for Government who research these things, but who probably haven't been consulted on this.
Almost certainly not.
Which is, again, why it's kind of hard to take very, very seriously. Why do you think the Number 10 operation didn't distance themselves from Sabisky's remarks?
In pure incompetence is my only guess. Is given... Oh, I really don't want to talk about this because it's so depressing, but given...
The world we're in, Steve.
Yeah, I know. Given the fact that some of Sabisky's views were about eugenics and about the intelligence of black people and things like that, the media, quite rightly and correctly, asked the government's, I think it was the deputy kind of like comms person who was on duty that day, does the Prime Minister agree with Andrew Sabisky about eugenics? Does the Prime Minister believe that black people are less intelligent than are less intelligent than white people? Government's response: either no comment, or the Prime Minister's views on these matters have been made very clear in the past.
Which is unfortunate given Boris Johnson's writings on race, which we've talked about on previous podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely, including writings which basically, which I think was from his days in The Spectator, where he essentially wrote, "You know what the issue with Africa is these days? It's not that Britain and the colonial powers went in there to begin with, it's that we left. If we could, we should just go back in there and be able to sort it all out for them." So it is entirely possible that actually... Who really knows? Boris Johnson may actually agree with those views. It wouldn't shock me if it turned out to be the case. But rather than make a competent statement of the fact and just, even if they were lying through their teeth and just going, no, of course not, that would be stupid. For some reason, the government decided to go no comment, and the Prime Minister's views are well recorded on these matters. And it's like, why would you say that? What possible reason do you have to give that such a god-awful response?
Only if you were maybe fear of saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
It's the only thing I can think of is you genuinely, like, you were blindsided, which is mad when you think about it, given it would be top on the news agenda, and you were scared that you might say something wrong. And there probably is... because of what Cummings is doing with his war on special advisors, there probably is quite a culture of fear around Downing Street at the moment. And people are probably scared stiff about saying the wrong thing because they think they're going to be out on their ear straight away. And this leads us back to one of the things that Cummings said in his original blog, where he basically says, you might as well tear up all your employment rights. You know, you're not going to have any rights. You're not going to have time for a social life. You're not going to have time for a girlfriend if you work for me. Like, again, a bad motivational speaker thinking if we just make everyone scared and cause chaos, then it will lead to efficient work. But that's not how things actually do fair in practice.
Yeah, and it very much kind of demonstrates both, I think, for Cummings and Boris Johnson, their lack of any real management experience in terms of how they manage people, because anybody who's ever attempted to manage someone or ever been on management training knows that that does not work. You don't scare people into efficiency. You have to work with them. You have to develop them. You have to actually make sure that they're actually content in some form, because the main thing that people are that motivates people in work, it isn't like their salary or whatever, it's job satisfaction. If you feel satisfied with your job, you'll put up with pretty much anything. How can you make people satisfied if your approach is to basically say, you're not going to have a life, I'm going to work you so hard you're going to want to quit? It's like,
but again, this all feels like a symptom of a number 10 operation which has a very limited shelf life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, as you said, Cummings made his name in the North East Assembly, later on ran the Leave campaign, was a spad for Michael Gove, and then left. All of those operations had a
shelf life.
Yeah, they had a clock attached to them. And this feels like it did too. I mean, and it seems like he was appointed by Johnson in the first place, essentially to win him an election and get a strategy to win a majority, which he's got. But now that Cummings is now part of that number 10 operation, I just don't see how it lasts for very long.
No, it will be very interesting to see what happens here, because there are already like rumblings and things about how the spads that the Tories do have aren't very happy, and a number of them are already looking to up and leave, which I'm sure Dominic Cummings will love, because it will cull the weak or something daft like that in his opinion, in all likelihood. If you hear that noise, listeners, that's the sound of our producer, Salvo Cat, playing with string.
Yeah, licking herself.
Yeah. But yeah, so where was I?
You were talking about almost survival of the fittest.
Yeah, so from Cummings' perspective, all of those spads leaving is going to be a sign of success, because he's culling the herd. Like, and then we can replace these weaklings with more Andrew Sabiskis.
Well, with true believers, I suppose, is the thing. It's how you might affect change at a school, I suppose. You try and... I mean, it's similar to what Gove did at education. If you bring in a system that's so divisive and you get people who don't share those values to leave, and then you're left with people who do share those values. And Richard Murphy made the point very well at the time. That might work in an individual school on a micro level where you're trying to change the culture of a particular place. It doesn't work on a macro level over a whole school education system.
No, absolutely not.
I don't see how it works as a system of government. And really? I think it's... And again, like with the sacking of people in the reshuffle, like not promoting people like Ian Duncan-Smith, there's just a lot of pissing off of people you really don't want to be pissing off at the moment.
Yeah, which further leads into the notion that this could potentially be a very short-lived government, because Johnson's eroding his base, like, already.
Those pissed off chickens are going to come home to roost.
Yep.
So if we finish off... Okay, so a question you posed in the prep for this was about the wider issue of, to what extent does someone's previous views mean that they can't hold a position in government?
Yeah, so to start off with this, let me just reiterate, Sabiski's views are abhorrent. He should absolutely have resigned. He shouldn't have been hired in the first place.
Steve's a secret eugenicist.
Look, I'm not Richard Dawkins.
He's trying to breed a WWE wrestler. With those people who I don't know.
Again, let me reiterate. Sabiski's views are abhorrent. Like, he's absolutely right to have been... to have resigned, quote-unquote, or been fired, whichever has actually happened in this instance. And he shouldn't have been hired in the first place. For many, many, many reasons. But it does bring up, to my mind, an interesting little kind of, you know, thought experiment, I suppose is the way to kind of put it. What kind of role does having a dodgy view here or there in some capacity, what role should it play in kind of like eliminating people from public life or public service in some capacity? Does, for instance, a belief in homeopathy, which is something that's quite prevalent, including amongst MPs and things, with people who will... Should a view of belief in homeopathy stop you from working in the Department for Local Government? You're not advising on health. Should that be an issue? Should that remove you? Likewise, does being an anti-vaxxer stop you from working in defence? The defence where actually your views on that one particular topic, as niche and edge case as they are and kind of problematic for definite, does that meet, should that immediately like disqualify you from public service of these sorts of roles, or to be an MP or whatever? Those are not the same thing, absolutely, as in my view, as what Sabisky we have evidence of him supporting and kind of like being in favour of. They're not in any way, to be honest, similar, I would say. But it does kind of beg that question. Is there a kind of a line that we need to draw? And if there is a line, where do we draw it?
So I think the line is the fact that Sabisky is talking about the idea of eugenics itself and talking about people being, different groups of people being worth less than other groups of people. So the fact you're talking about black people being inherently less clever than white people, the fact you're talking about people being innately stupid, the fact you're talking about excluding people and basically neutering people who are poor, maybe because their teenage mums say. I think that you can't have those people working in government for the same reason that, say, you couldn't be a teacher if you remember the BNP.
Yeah.
Because if you remember the BNP, you believed that certain groups of people
were inferior,
they shouldn't be British and they shouldn't be living here. And there's no way you can treat those kids equally in your class. So I would say, if you've got those views, you can't be at the heart of government, because you are not going to think about providing government policy in an equitable way for the whole of the population and treating groups equally. So I think in terms of Sabisky, there's a very good...
there's an absolute ironclad case of why he shouldn't be there.
But I think that verbalises it.
Yeah.
That's the kind of the reason you would say.
Yeah.
And I suppose the question is, what about views like homeopathy? I mean, I'm reminded of the fact that actually Jeremy Hunt, I'm pretty sure, signed EDMs and homeopathy and ended up being Secretary of State for Health and is now chair of the Health Select Committee. I suppose with those eccentric views...
That was the word I was looking for, eccentric.
It's, I mean, for me, again, it's more of a judgment thing. If we go on what Cummings is trying to do, and Cummings is trying to hire data scientists and people who believe in numbers and figures and wonderful, weird things like that,
they shouldn't be holding those views to begin with.
Right, exactly. It's to say, so it, for me, it would be the similar with, say, climate change denial, because there's a clear scientific consensus. It's not even that we need the odd maverick who just thinks, oh, it's just hot. No, you obviously don't understand science and numbers, and that is a problem. Can it stop you from being a civil servant? Well, no, though we can't stop MPs. We can't stop people being MPs who have eccentric views. And there's no reason why you might not be a spad in a different area. But I think it depends what you're trying to do.
So it's almost like a case-by-case basis, potentially, whilst blatantly racist things are absolutely unacceptable regardless of where you're working. Other issues where, as you say, if you're you have a belief in homeopathy but you're not advising on health, it doesn't really matter.
And I think even in terms of, say, if you've thought or said very hurtful things about minority groups, there are very good cases. I mean, we've talked about ones like Naj Shah on this podcast, who have said and done very hurtful things about groups of people, who have shown contrition. You know, there are ways of doing it and there are ways of showing contrition. And so obviously, you know, we have to believe in forgiveness and we have to believe that you can hold views and change. I mean, that's the whole, I would say that's part of just being human, not just about being socialist or social democrat. But there's no reason to suggest that Andrew Sabisky's done any of that self-reflection.
The fact that they didn't make their first action was to get Sabisky to put out a statement saying, I recant these views, like, I do not believe in these anymore, suggests that the comms team basically went up and said, can you put this out? And he probably refused and said, no, because I do believe these. Because he's the sort of arrogant maverick who thinks he knows better, and that as a result, he's probably just going to say, no, I'm not going to lie to people about what I behold to be truth.
Or is that the old politics? We do it differently now. We don't have to apologise. We don't have to explain. I mean, that's been Cummings' argument, being doorstep by supporters.
Still got rid of him, though.
It's true.
Like the new politics of that would have kept him on, surely.
Well, if you want to give us some money to not talk about eugenics, do you want to visit our Patreon page?
Yeah, if you head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/notenoughchampagne, you'll get access to unique content, including episodes of the podcast, and blogs, which will only be available there. You'll get access to some content early. There's some discussions going on there amongst our backers, which we haven't come up with a name for yet. But if you do decide to head over there and give us a look, just know that we use the money to help fund and run the podcast. It covers our costs, and over time, hopefully, we're looking to expand what we do, looking to acquire new equipment, and it all helps with that.
Well, at the moment, it covers our costs.
Yeah.
Later on, it might pay for train fares, so we can go and interview people in person.
Yep.
Hello, Mark, by the way. It's been a while. We have a website, notenoughchampagne.com. We are Facebook pages, facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. James Cram designed our logo. Dave Depper composed our theme tune. My Twitter handle is @paperbackwriter.
Mine is @acousticradical.
Happy plotting.